became a society for animals. At its beginning, it was not about animals at all. It was actually for humans, for people like you and me. 150 years ago on Nantucket Island, it's just off the rocky coast of the Atlantic in Massachusetts. It's a really nasty area that has, beautiful area, but nasty area if you are in a ship, because there are rocks everywhere and it's pretty treacherous. And so many lives still today get lost up and down that area, because what happens is ships wreck and they capsize and they have all sorts of problems. So this little group that called themselves the Humane Society, back in the 1800s, they decided to build small little huts, like these tiny little huts, near where all the lighthouses were, and there's tons of lighthouses out there. And what would happen is they would go build these huts up and down the coast, and whenever a ship would go down, there would be a signal that would go out and tell them, hey, a ship has capsized, a ship has gone down, and word would go out, and all these people who would be in these huts and take their little, like, neighborhood watch time, but really it was Atlantic Ocean watch time, they would go out and devote themselves to save every life they could. They had equipment, they had different things, there was different groups, they would call people together, and they'd go out and they'd save these lives. And there was no money, and there was no recognition. All they did was just help save human life. They even had a motto. Here was their motto, I'll put it up here. You have to go out, but you don't have to come back. That is not the greatest recruiting slogan, I'm going to tell you. Now, before the Coast Guard took this over decades ago, what these people did is they saved thousands of lives. In fact, you can go out into that area in Massachusetts on Nantucket Island and some other areas around there, and you can see plaques about all of the lives that these people saved. Again, no money, no recognition, but tons of lives of people they had never met. They'd never seen, they'd never known, they were never going to know. And every once in a while I think about this group of people in groups like this, because these people saved lives of people they may not have even liked. Like, really, they may have been to save a life of someone who was capsized, and they saved this person's life, brought him back to the hut, started to talk about to him about their life and who they are and what their thoughts were and their ideas and their beliefs and all this. And as they were talking, I'm going, oof, I should have let this one drown, I think. This one's tough. I mean, think about it. We do this. We meet people all the time. It's pretty constant, who have aspects to them that we don't like. It's beyond just that we don't agree with them. We don't really like them. And for some of us, we think some of them are just bad. They're bad people, which is really nice because it means we're the good people. And so when we figure this out, we start to see certain personalities or certain people, and we don't particularly like them, we can start to be fairly judgmental of people that are different than us, that see the world different than us. Last week, I highlighted this spectrum that'll come up there, community and aloneness. And I said, on one side, you have community, which is all people together. And on the other side, you have aloneness, which is solitude. And last week, I talked about there being this healthy balance we're supposed to have. And I said, you know, there's some people who kind of are a little more on the together. You like people a lot. And there's other people who you like the solitude a little more. You like to be alone a lot. But healthy people find some place towards the middle. And when they do that, what they find is as they mature, their anxiety, I called it our anxiety index last week, your anxiety goes down as you feel more whole internally, and you can be alone or around people and feel a sense of, okay, I'm okay. Things are okay. And when you do that, you start to be more authentic, as we discussed last week. This week, what I want to discuss is our authentic self veers more towards the alone solitude side, meaning I want to be who I am alone and when I'm together with other people, when I'm in community. My hope is, to some degree, you are not hiding yourself too much right now than you were, say, early this morning when nobody was around, or maybe yesterday. That you're not that different. This week, I want to talk about how this helps us learn, when we go into community with people, what would it look like to welcome other people? What does it look like to bring people in? To maybe even be in a little hut and maybe even need to rescue someone and realize, oh, I don't really agree with them. I think maybe there's a problem with them, but I'm still going to somehow let them know that they're okay and they're loved. The big verse, the big passage for today is from Romans 15. I talk a lot about Romans, and basically Romans chapters 1 through 11 is a treatise on what it means to be a follower of Christ. If you really want to tackle something important and good, tackle Romans 1 through 11. You will get a lot in Romans 1 through 11. But when you flip to Romans 12:1, he says, therefore, that's what Paul says, he says, therefore. Therefore, everything I've taught you about Christianity from Romans 1 through 11, therefore, here's now what you should do with it. And towards the end, he starts saying things like this. Welcome one another just as Christ has welcomed you. Just so you know, welcome here means to receive and accept others as they are. It is to let people come in so that they know they are loved very, very quickly. The word I like to use is another word that's a W word, which is warm. I think, how do I be warm with people? Invite people in. Let them know I want to know them, that I want them to be able to know me. When I think of warm, I think of three kind of basic things. When I get real practical with it, I think of my facial features. That if someone is coming in and they are meeting me even for the first time, whether it's here at the Journey or somewhere else, that I want them to know right away that I'm okay with them. Now, I may get to know them and build some massive boundaries, who knows, right? But I still want them to know that there is love for them. And so I welcome them in with my face. I smile. I let them know, hey, you can come in. I want to like you. I want you to like me. I want my tone of voice to be loving. I want to take the responsibility to be the one who's warm in the relationship. And maybe they're not warm. Maybe I might even say they're being cold. I figure that's because they're not sure how to be welcoming. That God has actually given us the responsibility of bringing people in. So it's my responsibility to be warm with my tone. So I may ask them a question. I may get curious. I may invite them to let me, to just kind of let me know about them. Give me some information. And then my words would be warm. I'd say things that would tell them, hey, you're okay. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad to get to know you. Trying to be warm in everything is much like what happened with the Humane Society. Because everybody shipwrecks sometimes. Everybody capsizes sometimes. And when people capsize and they shipwreck, they need a call to go out to say, I need people to come in and rescue me. Now, you may not think about this when you're meeting people or introducing yourself, or even people that you've known and you're seeing them again and you're bringing them in. You may not realize how much rescuing they need in that very moment. You may not realize that that person got chewed out by their boss this week, that they're scared about their job. You may not realize that a child has failed at school, is barely getting by. You may not realize that you're talking to a wife who's just had a fight with her husband, but it's not the first, and she's getting slowly more and more disappointed in her marriage, and she doesn't know what to do or who to talk to. The mental illness may have stricken the family in ways they didn't expect. You may not realize that there's a boat that's capsized and there's a person in it, and they're in a really poor financial place, and they're actually not sure what they're going to do, and they're scared. You may not realize that the person you're talking to, even someone you've known for a while, they don't feel just alone, which we all need at times. They feel lonely all the time. And so our lifelines to people are not huts, they are not boats. They're just mostly the words we offer. That every word we speak has the power either to give a little life to somebody, give them a little warmth, let them know they're going to be okay, but we also have the power to destroy a little bit of their spirit, to destroy a little bit of their vitality. I think of the story of a woman. The story of this woman is kind of interesting. She's about to get fully shipwrecked. I mean, the boat is going to capsize. And she's scared. I mean, really, really scared. She knows what could happen. Instead of saving her, all the people that are supposed to be there for her are condemning her. We read about this woman in the 8th chapter of John. Now, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot going on in John chapter 8. In fact, I would encourage you, read John chapter 8. It would be a good place to start if you're going to read Romans 1 through 11. Start with John chapter 8, because you'll get a nice picture of who Jesus is in John chapter 8. As we like to say at The Journey, if you don't have a Bible, there's Bibles back there on that same connect table. Grab one of those. Make it your own. Write your name in it. Take it home. Flip about two-thirds of the way in and get to John chapter 8. In John chapter 8, Jesus is about to be stoned by people, killed by people, because he proclaims himself the Christ. It's one of seven times in the book of John where he says, I am. When they're asking who he is, he says, I am, which is a reminder of the God of the Israelites from Exodus. He claims divinity. He claims to be part of what we call the Trinity. And when he does this, they want to kill him. By the way, there's a vanishing act in there too. So go read John chapter 8. But right at the beginning of John chapter 8, we get another story about this woman. This woman is in an adulterous affair. Now, it's probable that she herself is married. Scholars kind of agree or disagree on that. But it's also probable that the man she's having the affair with is married. And I'm sure this was a pretty innocent thing at first. Most of the things we do in our life start out fairly innocent. Most people aren't diabolically thinking like this. Things just happen, and then we have the consequences of the things that happen. But eventually this crossed a line, and she felt pretty miserable about it. I don't know if you've ever been in this place of what we would call, and what the Bible calls, sin, which is just this place where we're missing the mark of how we're supposed to live. We're supposed to be aiming for something good and just do something that has purpose and meaning in this world. And when we don't do that, we start to veer off a little bit. We go into other lanes that we think are important, but usually they leave us a little wanting. Well, that's what she's involved in, and she feels bad about it. And I don't know if you've ever been there. My guess is you have. I have. And it may not have been an adulterous affair, but it was something or some things. And you could see yourself missing the lane you're supposed to be in, and you go off a little bit. That's where this woman was. But she did not feel miserable enough, it seems, to stop. It just kept happening. And so she kept it a secret, which is basically us living in two different worlds. We're showing people who we want to be, but they don't know who we actually are. And that's what's going on with her. She tries to keep everything separate, but then some men are waiting and watching while she's with this other man. In fact, it's possible they were even colluding with the man she was with. It's hard to know. But she continues the adulterous affair, and these men barge in, catch her in the act, pull her out of the bed, wrap a sheet around her, and they bring her to Jesus. I mean, this is a pretty crazy, scandalous scene. This woman kind of being walked through the city. Jesus is just there doing what Jesus does, teaching a group of people, and this woman is brought before him. They're more than willing to humiliate her publicly because all they really want to do is humiliate Jesus. And so here's what they say. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group. And they said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in an act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They're using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. It's an interesting beginning to the story. Again, I'll say, go read John chapter 8. It's about 60 verses. There's a lot happening there. But this is our beginning. They stand this woman before the group. She's beyond humiliated. That's fine. She's humiliated. She also has so much guilt and shame from everything. She's now been fully caught. She's done something that she is not proud of. And now she has to be in front of all these people dragged from this bed. I mean, it's a pretty nasty situation. And what she doesn't realize is she's just a pawn in a game. And the game is that these guys just want to get Jesus. The law says you're supposed to do this. What do you say, Jesus? Now, we all know what Jesus is going to say to some degree because, as we say all the time at The Journey, Jesus is grace. Jesus is undeserved love. He isn't about the law. C.S. Lewis draws a nice line between sins of the flesh and sins of the spirit. I want to talk about that for a moment. It's really important in this story. Sins of the flesh are things that we all kind of know about because we see them. You've lied before. You may have lied recently about something. It may have been a small lie, but you lied. It could be simple this week. You just didn't want to go to work this week. And so you made a small little lie. You didn't want to go do something you were supposed to do, so you made up a small little lie. And eventually you make another lie, and you can become a liar. You got to be careful. That's a sin of the flesh. Sometimes people steal. Sometimes people commit adultery. Sometimes people have angry words. These are sins of the flesh. I do things. I hurt people. I hurt myself. But then there's these sins of the spirit. And these are very different, and these are hidden, and you don't see these. And C.S. Lewis, here's the quote C.S. Lewis has about the sins of the spirit. It says, "The sins of the flesh are bad, but they are the least bad of all sins." I love that phrase, the least bad of all sins. "All the worst pleasures are purely spiritual, sins of the spirit. It is the pleasure of putting other people in the wrong." Basically, what that means is I know who's wrong, and it's not me, it's you. That's a sin of the spirit. Some of us walk around with this sin. We just go around thinking we are superior to certain people. Many of us probably do that. To some degree, all of us probably do that without consciously realizing how sinful it is, how much we're missing the mark of how we're supposed to be living. Now, we may say, I don't do as many sins of the spirit or of the flesh. You might be going, I don't lie, I don't steal, I don't commit adultery. That's why I'm so good. Or it may be something else, where you see people that you just think are bad, or you disagree with, or they have different ideas or beliefs or whatever. All the worst pleasures are purely spiritual, the pleasure of putting other people in the wrong, of bossing people around, of patronizing, of being a spoiling sport, of backbiting, the pleasures of power, of hatred. None of you would be hateful people, right? Well, I wouldn't know because it wouldn't be obvious. I might be able to catch you in a lie or catch you stealing or catch you in adultery like they did this woman or catch you with angry words. I can see this and go, ah, there it is. This one's really hard. The way you're treating people in your spirit. He says that is why a cold, self-righteous snob who goes regularly to the church may be far nearer to hell than a prostitute. But of course, he says it's better to be neither. Sins of the flesh, easy to see, but the sins of the spirit are insidious because we don't have a clue we're guilty. That's where this gets so hard. This is where we have to deal with the Holy Spirit in our lives and say, God, help me. Not just stay away from the sins of the flesh, but help me be a better person internally. The reason I'm not warm outside, the reason my face and my tone and my words aren't warm enough, the reason I do these things and act this way is because my sins of the spirit are heavy. They're burdens. What happens for us is if you looked at verse 5, it had said, in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Stone. If you don't know what that means, they literally picked up stones, and they would all stone her, and one thing would hit her, and it would hit her here, and hit her in her vital organs. And these weren't just little stones, these were big stones. And eventually one would hit her head. And over time, she would fall down, and the stones would keep coming, and eventually she would die. That was stoning. And yet we sit with stones in our hands that are different, but pretty much the same. Stones of judgment, stones of a superior attitude, stones of self-righteousness, stones of impatience, stones of little tiny resentments that become bitterness. and we have little room for love. As Anne Lamott, I love the way she said it one day. She said, you can safely assume you've created God in your own image, not been created in his image, but created God in your own image, when it turns out that God hates all the same people you do. I just assume God hates all the same people I do, right? Do you? I won't have a raise of hands, but do you think God just doesn't like the same people you don't like? Like, have your sins of the Spirit gotten so self-righteous that you think you speak for God in some way? These are the things we do in our own little sins of the Spirit. Nobody else knows. In fact, in the flesh, we might be just really nice people. What a great person. By the way, it's one of the reasons I stay off social media, because I don't want to see the people that I think are really nice and then see the thoughts they have sometimes. I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do with that. It's so harsh, so angry. Why would you be that person and be this person? Oh, you're in different lanes. You're losing yourself. And you think you're so right, and God hates the same people you hate. It's not the way God works. It's the way we work. It's the way I work. There's plenty of people I dislike. I just wish God hated them too. But he doesn't. Jesus bends down. He starts to write on the ground with his finger. They kept on questioning him. I like that part. They kept on questioning him. What are you doing? Why aren't we stoning her? She's bad. She's bad. Look what she's done. Look how bad she is. So much self-righteousness here. By the way, when we point out self-righteousness, which is what I'm doing right now, we just become self-righteous ourselves. So right now, I'm telling everybody, stop being self-righteous, which just makes me a little self-righteous. It's an ugly situation. They keep questioning him. So he straightens up, and he says to all those gathered, he goes, let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, then he stooped down and he started to write on the ground. And at this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first. I would just probably say the wiser ones first. And you don't have to be older to be wiser. You can be wise as a young person. You just have to make some choices to follow wise people. I think there could have been a 15-year-old, if they had decided to follow Jesus, would be as wise as an 80-year-old in that space. You just have to follow Jesus. You can be unbelievably wise. The older ones first, the wisest ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. I don't know what he's writing. Nobody knows what he's writing. But he's doing something very simple. He's saying, go ahead and throw your stone if you want. I'm just going to hang out here by this woman writing in the ground. You'll probably hit me with your stones. Are you that self-righteous that you'd hit me too? Okay. So go ahead, pass judgment, condemn her. Just make sure you're sinless yourself. He's not talking about sins of the flesh. He's talking about sins of the Spirit. Make sure inside who you are, you're sinless yourself. How you think about people, how you judge people, how you condemn people. Just remember that sinful people, fallen people, have no right to throw stones. Paul would later explain that when sinful people start passing judgment, when any of us, when I sit up here and get real self-righteous, like I'm trying not to do, but you start to feel that way, right? And other people somehow are the bad people, then when you stand up there and you get real self-righteous, you actually end up passing judgment on yourself. It's like the old game where I'm pointing a finger at you and there's three fingers pointing back at me. That's the spiritual game we play. Every time we don't welcome people, we don't accept people because they're different and we don't think they believe the right ways or think the right things, whatever the ideology they have is, it's wrong. We are casting judgment on ourselves. We're showing just how messed up we are, how broken we are, how fallen we are. We are, as I said to begin this series, as is people. Final sale. I think it's refreshing to be reminded that I'm as is. That I got a lot of problems. I have a lot of abnormalities about me. because we realize we need help, but it also produces more warmth. I start to realize I need rescuing too. I capsize sometimes. So then I see other people and they capsize and I don't judge. They think live differently. They live differently. They do things differently. And I figure out some way to bring them in warmly. We all in our own way need to be welcomed. And so Jesus straightens up. And he asks her, "Woman, where are they? Where are all the people? Has no one condemned you?" And this woman, I just kind of try to put myself in her position as best I can, but it's almost impossible. It's not just that she has to feel bad for what she's done, because she has participated in something that took her off, but she has been found out and she's been condemned, and I feel so bad for what she's had to go through. There's all these places where you can condemn people, but at some point you just got to go, "Ah, that's heartbreaking. That's heartbreaking what's happening to this woman. Where are all these people that should be condemning you?" "Oh, they're gone. They're all gone. Has no one condemned you?" My favorite part of this is I kind of wonder if Jesus has even looked up. I get what's going on here as he straightens up and asks her, but did he even really look up? It's almost like he knew. I just think he knew. They're all just dropping stones, thud, thud, as they leave. He's just writing, and they're leaving, and he just knows. And she, through tears and fear, says, "No one, sir." "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." It's an interesting thing. He encourages her and any of us to stop sinning to end this. Because he's basically saying, yes, sins of the flesh aren't good either. They destroy us from the inside out. You should be very careful what lanes you're choosing in life. But he does not call her out for sins of the flesh any more than he calls out the stone throwers for the sins of the spirit. Jesus says to this woman what he says to all of us, as is people, "You're warmly welcomed into my presence." And I watch this story. I see what's going on here. And sometimes I feel like the woman, and sometimes I feel like the stone throwers. And I don't know where you're at. Some of you in here may more right now be feeling like the woman. You may be really identifying with her right now. And some of us may be really identifying with the stone throwers. By the way, there's many theories as to what Jesus wrote on that ground. I mean, lots. You can go read about them. Some people think he wrote a list of the sins of the spirit. That's possible. You know, we had all the, yeah, you know, there's all the commands in the Old Testament. They bring up one of them. He starts to write down, you know, self-righteousness, lack of compassion, not welcoming. You know, he's starting to write these down. Possibly. But I kind of have always just thought in my head, it's the way I like to picture Jesus, that he goes down to this place and he's writing in the sand and nobody else can read it because they've all got their stones and they're facing this way. And I see this woman looking down as he's writing and she can see what he's writing. And I've just always thought, I just have always pictured him writing something like, "My child, I love you. My child, it's going to be okay. Don't worry. I've got you. I'll handle this." And that there's some encouragement that comes from her. Because when we warmly welcome people, here's what we do. It's my favorite part of the word, encourage. I love to encourage people because all encouragement is, you don't have courage, you don't have fear, I'm going to give you a little of mine, a little of my courage. I'm going to tell you, you're going to be okay, I believe in you. Like I said, sometimes we're the woman and sometimes we have the stones. So I ask you, do you have any stones maybe in here that you need to let go of? Do you condemn? When I started talking about the stone thrower, did you kind of identify with that a little bit? Do you think some people are not worthy of God's love because of their actions or their words? Perhaps you have some stones that you hold against your mother or your father or a sibling or another relative. And I get it, maybe they've hurt you. You feel you have the right to condemn, I get it. But boy, you hold that stone tight. I mean, your hands are getting loud, kind of red. There's like so grasping that stone. It's really hard to let go. Try to fit it in your pocket and go about your day, but it starts to weigh you down. In fact, if that stone gets big enough, it starts to condemn you. You don't feel right inside. You don't feel appropriate. Like I said, if you're condemning other people, you're really condemning yourself. Maybe it's an ex-spouse or a boss or a coworker, someone who's hurt you. And perhaps you've carried that stone for so long, it's turning more and more bitter, more judgmental than you want to believe. And I will say this, you may now need to take some action, really. You need to drop that stone. I'm just going to challenge you. If you, and by the way, it takes courage to drop that stone, but I'm going to challenge you today. I'm going to encourage you as someone who has a lot of stones that I've had to drop over the years. A lot of people I didn't like that I'd look at God and go, we're in agreement here, right? Bad people, bad person. You can take it from a stone dropper. It takes a lot of courage to drop those stones, to give up that bitterness, to let it go. This is what God is asking of you. I challenge you. Take some action. And it can be simple. Maybe you're a gossip spreader. Maybe it's that simple. You like to talk about people. Go to the person you talked to about someone and tell them you're sorry. Don't go to the person you talked about. They don't even know you talked about them. Go to the person that you gossip to. And maybe you have someone in your office, a neighbor, a friend, a family member. You love to gossip to them. In fact, maybe you gossip to them about the people. Go to them and go, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. I'm sorry. And maybe your heart is hard towards someone. Maybe there is someone that you're holding so much stone, it's like, I can't do this. And I'm going to tell you there's a couple options. Write a letter to them, a letter of forgiveness. It may be someone that you don't even give it to, but hopefully it's somebody you can give it to. And if you're really not sure what to do, do an act of kindness to them. Do something warm for them. Do an act of service for them, that person you don't like. See if God changes you. See if God starts to let go of that grip of that stone, and you go, ah, I think I can do this. I got to stop living like this. It's not doing me any good. Maybe you've behaved badly towards someone. I would tell you, go to them. Go to them today. Ask forgiveness. Welcoming others brings us closer to the heart of Jesus, because I'm telling you, we all want a friend like Jesus. I said at the beginning, the holy God that is the God of the universe, the all-powerful, almighty, everything, gives us access to friendship. That we want someone who sees our darkness, sees your darkness, and yet loves you. Someone who has no rocks to throw. By the way, this woman has found such a man. No one's condemned her. They're all away, and she looks up, and she's found a friend. And we're at the end of this story, and the only one left is Jesus and this woman. And it's interesting, too, because the only one who has a right to throw a stone at her or anyone is Jesus. He's the only one who says, anyone who is without sin, anyone without sin, you get to cast a stone. Jesus right there could just pick up stones and say, all right, he can. He's without sin. And even he doesn't condemn. He's not simply pointing out the absence of all the stone throwers. He's trying to point out that every one of them is broken just as she is. He's letting her know she's okay. That every one of them is just as is as her. That nobody can be superior to anyone else. That as Romans says, Romans 8, no condemnation. And yet, those final words, I'll put them up there again. Go now and leave your life of sin. It's a final little message from Jesus to her and to us today. And I close just letting you think about this. These words mean something deep and powerful. She is standing there filled with pain and regret about her past, shame that has been put on her, imposed on her by a group of people. Standing there shivering, scared. And he still says to her, go and stop sinning. Because for her, sin was this idea of things that are regretful and painful. But now Jesus says, no, 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 I'm offering you hope. That you get to choose to live different. And I said, Jesus offers every single person in here hope. Whether you identify more with the woman or the stone throwers, there is hope. There's a whole different lane to go down. An aim to be more like Jesus. That is the gift of Jesus welcoming all of us into a different way of life. As the worship team comes to lead us, I want us to go to the Eucharist thinking of one phrase that's just a notch before go and knee now and leave your life of sin. I want to be mindful of these words. Then neither do I condemn you. Neither do I condemn you. These are powerful words for you. They're powerful words for me. If you're sitting in sins of the flesh like this woman, Jesus does not condemn you. If you're sitting in sins of the Spirit like all these people, Jesus does not condemn you. He's just trying to get you to come back to where he is. Neither do I condemn you. So the place you're in right now, whether you're in a place of shame and hiding, or in a place of self-righteousness, or just a place of confusion, trying to figure out what it means to follow Jesus, Jesus welcomes you into the true grace of God's love. You are loved, you are welcomed, you are accepted. And when Jesus looks at you, it's with, I promise, warm face, warm tone, warm words. Come to me. And so wherever you're at, I encourage you to go to the welcoming arms of Christ and become a welcoming person yourself. When you're ready to go, I encourage you to go and respond at the table. You are going to go meet with the Holy God at the table. You are going to take the bread, a symbol of Christ's body that was broken. You are going to dip it into the wine or the juice, a symbol of Christ's blood that was spilled for you. And you are going to bring that into your body because the holiness of God can now come and live among us. And so I encourage you to respond there. If you're a guest with us or new to the journey, come, be a part of this with us. Come and take the bread, take the wine with us. As we prepare to go to the table, let us pray. Lord, I pray for the people who identify with the woman here today, which in some degree is all of us, God, but there may be some that sit in shame and hiding right now. There's things in their life that they're not sure how to get out of even, and they may feel miserable like she did, but not miserable enough to stop, and they're not sure what to do. And God, the journey, like you, welcomes them. We'll take their as-is-ness here, God. I invite them just to know that they're loved right now. But I also know that you welcome them. You want to warmly bring them in, to change them from the inside out. And God, I pray for the stone throwers today, which in some way is all of us, but those who identify with the stone throwers. And maybe, God, those who should identify with the stone throwers, God, I just pray that you let that grip off a little bit for them. Whoever that person is, or those people are, or that situation is, whatever that is, God, that is so heavy on them, that stone has become so heavy. Let go of that grip a little bit. Let your grace come into their heart just a little bit. And we now come to the table to respond to you, God. We respond to the life you lived. We respond to the death where you gave your spirit, your body, all of it up for us. And we respond to the resurrection that we now become as you live in us. Thank you for this table. Thank you for this time. It's in your name, Christ Jesus, we pray. Amen.